feeling is, you don't know.
With 603,000 people have died globally from COVID-19. There are more than 14.3 million confirmed cases worldwide, with more than 3.7 million in the U.S. and more than 2 million in Brazil. India has passed the 1 million mark in terms of infections, followed by Russia with over 770,000 cases and South Africa with more than 350,000 cases. The International Monetary Fund has said the world is in the midst of the worst recession since the Great Depression and warned that it could take 2 years for economic output to return to what it was before the pandemic. And the United Nations has said that up to 265 million people could face starvation by the end of the year because of the impact of COVID-19. Meanwhile, Hong Kong reports a record number of new cases at 100. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam Sunday tightened social distancing measures to tackle this sudden surge. Hong Kong was one of the first places struck by the virus when it emerged from central China late last year, but the city had success in tackling the disease, all but ending local transmissions by late June. But Lam said Sunday that more than 500 infections had been confirmed in the past 2 weeks, almost a third of the nearly 1,800 cases in Hong Kong since the outbreak started. Hong Kong was already mired in recession when the pandemic hit, thanks to the U.S.-China trade war and months of political unrest, both last year and this year. The new partial lockdown has compounded that economic hardship. And sumo wrestling opened to live audiences in Tokyo Sunday, despite a steady rise in coronavirus infections in Japan. This comes a week after Japanese baseball and football opened stadiums to spectators. This is VOA News. The Iranian judiciary has suspended the executions of 3 men linked to anti-government protests in November. That's according to one of the men's attorneys speaking Sunday. Rights activists had said the death sentences were aimed at intimidating future protesters. With hardship mounting because of U.S. sanctions and the coronavirus pandemic, Iran's clerical rulers have been trying to prevent a revival of anti-government protests that took place last November, when hundreds are believed to have been killed in the worst street violence since the 1979 revolution. The Farsi hashtag Don't Execute was tweeted millions of times last week. In a rare acknowledgment of popular dissent, a government spokesman commented that the tweets were, quote, a civil action by citizens trying to be heard. A volunteer at the St. Pierre and St. Paul Cathedral in Nantes, France, has been detained after a fire tore through the church. The man was in charge of locking up the day before the blaze destroyed stained glass windows and the grand organ inside. The organ had reportedly survived both the French Revolution and World War II. Prosecutors said they wanted to clear up inconsistencies in the man's schedule, but stressed that it would be premature and hasty to think he had a role in the fire, which they do believe was arson. When the fire broke out Saturday, roughly 100 firefighters managed to stop flames from destroying the cathedral's main structure. The fire comes over a year after a blaze nearly destroyed Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. A Japanese rocket carrying a Mars spacecraft from the United Arab Emirates is on the launch pad ahead of Monday's scheduled liftoff of the Arab world's first interplanetary mission. The launch of the orbiter, named Amal or Hope, from a space center on a small island in southern Japan, was initially scheduled for this past Wednesday, but was delayed due to bad weather. Mitsubishi Heavy Industries provided the rocket. Hope is expected to reach Mars in February 2021, the year the UAE celebrates 50 years since its formation. A successful mission would be a major step for the oil-dependent nation now eyeing a space future. Hope will carry instruments to study the upper atmosphere and monitor climate change on Mars. It's scheduled to circle the red planet for at least 2 years. The UAE says it will provide a complete view of the Martian atmosphere during different seasons and for the first time. A newcomer in space development, the UAE has so far successfully launched 3 observation satellites, but has not gone beyond the Earth's orbit. 2 other Mars missions are planned in the coming days by the U.S. and by China. For more on these and other stories, please visit our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We have a general assembly with all the young folks in Bamako. So we are going to divide people between places, how to keep going with the fight. So that's the next point.
Malian opposition coalition plans fresh protest Monday to pressure President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to step down.
In some places, it is true, things are not going the way it ought to, and we raise red flags when these things happen, and we call on the police to act on these matters. But in most cases, people want us to take a stand and condemn one side against the other. Mediators don't function that way.
The Guinean National Peace Council calls on political parties to prevent their members from engaging in acts of violence in the run-up to the December general election.
I don't see a problem at all. But I'm sure that the discussions will consider a number of things before deciding which person should be the flag bearer of the opposition in the next elections.
And major Tanzanian opposition parties plan to form an alliance ahead of the upcoming polls. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Member of the Malian opposition coalition M5 says the group plans fresh protest Monday to pressure President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to step down. Mamari Binton Koulibaly says talks with the government broke down after their demands were not met. He says his group will only return to the negotiating table after officers accused of recently killing protesters are prosecuted. His remarks come after Prime Minister Bubu Sisi apologized for the excessive force the security forces used to stop the protests, but rejected the opposition demands for the president to step down. Officials say at least 11 people have been killed and many injured following weeks of protests. Koulibaly tells me the youth will be meeting Sunday evening local time to strategize for additional protests on Monday to continue the pressure on President Keita to step down, despite the government insistence that the demand is unacceptable.
As today, the development is not working yet because between our delegations and Nigerian former president Jonathan, we decided not to change our positions. So and the president also wants to stay, and the group of negotiations also are talking between the two guys, trying to make them come to one point. But unfortunately, it's not been working yet. But that was actually yesterday. And that was the last temptation. But they are saying they need to meet again one more time with our leaders. So that may be tomorrow or after tomorrow, I believe so.
What were your key demands and what led to the failure or the breakdown of the talks?
The breakdown or the failure of the talks are became complicated because when we had a manifestation, protestation on 10th of this month, we had actually 27 people has been killed. So therefore, the demand for the president to overthrow from his position is not only the demand from our people. Also, we would like to see those people who give orders to kill these innocent protesters. So therefore, now the prime minister is coming to ask forgiveness. But however, you know that people are not going to just forgive because they kids has been killed. So that's the main reason for the failure of negotiation. Right now, our leaders are saying only one thing. There's not going to even have any negotiation before those people who ordered to go killed has been tried. That's the failure point right now of the talk.
What do you say to critics who are of the opinion that your group failed to negotiate in good faith, which they said led to the breakdown of the talks?
Actually, those critics are not true. There was only one leader named Cao James. He's the one actually was the first to just stand up and left the talk because he was not happy of the way those people from the community international was handling the debates. So that's why he just left and went out, and he spoke to the pressmen and tell them that he believes those guys, I'm talking about the community, international community people, came just to protect the president. And he believes that also they don't care about the population. That's the main point, and that's the only thing he just understood from the talk. However, the rest of the group later on went to talk to him. So for the second time of negotiation, he went back. But everybody is saying that there is not going to be no negotiation before people has been tried. That's the breakdown point between the two people. And again, it's not like the group failed to negotiate in a good faith. No, for this group are being, all of them just became one group from the very beginning, and they're still the same group. So that one is not true, saying that they didn't go to the negotiation with the good faith. No, that's not true.
What do you plan on doing next following the breakdown of the talks? Are you going to resume talks, or are you going to begin yet another demonstrations across the country to force the president to step down? What do you do next?
We're going to start another new manifestation Monday until the president step down. And however, between now to Monday, whatever comes out, we are not even going to listen to our leaders, because as one of the leaders of the young folks, we decide that today we are going to enter the new protestation beginning tomorrow night. So before that, we have a general assembly with all the young folks in Bamako. So we are going to divide people between places, how to keep going with the fight. So that's the next point.
Mamari Binton Koulibaly is a leading member of the Malian opposition coalition M5. He spoke with me from the capital, Bamako. The Ghanaian National Peace Council is calling on political parties to stop their supporters from engaging in acts of violence in the run-up to the December 7 general election. This following report of isolated cases of violence at voter registration centers in some parts of the country. The Electoral Commission is in the process of compiling a new voter list to be used for the polls. Officials say a fresh register is needed following criticisms that the old one was bloated. The Peace Council said it has been engaging leaders of political parties and other stakeholders to ensure that the upcoming elections are peaceful, transparent, and credible. But the organization is coming under criticism for being biased. Some opposition groups say the group appears to always side with the government on several issues, thereby questioning its independence. But Reverend Emmanuel Asante, chairman of the National Peace Council, denies the allegation of bias. He tells me the organization remains neutral as it works to resolve any disputes between different groups.
As you probably might know, the Peace Council is an institution set up by an act of parliament to facilitate peace in the country. And we do a lot of things to avoid conflict so that people will use proper channels to seek solution to their problems, mediation, or use the courts, and so on. During elections, and you know that in our part of the world, elections become very, 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 creates a lot of tension. And so we are always alert. In the past, political parties have used groups they have called vigilantes who have caused havocs. And so the president called for the two political parties, NPP and DC, to try and come together and address the issue. They invited us to mediate. We did. And thanks be to God, we sign an accord agreeing on principles that the political parties will not use vigilantes, they will not use violent things, and that even if of their members get themselves involved in the act, they will disown that person. And when the police arrest, they are not going to rally around the person. We have also, as part of it, the way forward, the police have a role to play, the Peace Council has a role to play, other stakeholders have roles to play. So this is, and, you know, we see reports, we have been there, I myself and some other people have been to places, we've talked to people, and we feel that it's coming from both parties, the two major parties, and that is what led us to issue this statement, urging our political parties, especially the major political parties, to try and live by what they have agreed on in respect of the vigilante accord, and also bear in mind that our parliament has passed the law, Act 2019, Act 999, forbidding such political hooliganism, vigilantism in the political activity.
Reverend Asante, I understand that, but let me ask you this. Do you think that the Peace Council will continue to engage these political parties? Because these major political parties and their supporters, some Ghanaians say, create a lot of problems, tension, and violence. So will the Peace Council continue engaging them to remind them about their pledge and the agreement they signed to ensure their members do not engage in acts of violence that could create confusion and tension in the run-up to the election?
Yes, the Peace Council has already started doing that, especially in the Upper West, for instance. They just concluded an engagement between the political parties and stakeholders on vigilantism, especially on the accord that they signed. And they concluded one at Cape Coast, at the central region, just this weekend. Kumasi will start. And all the constituencies, the Peace Council will engage the political party leaders. You know, in the past, we have done things at the national level where we have had political party presidential candidates to sign accord, but we have not done much at the local levels, even though local peace councils have engaged political leaders there. This time round, we want to concentrate more on the local levels, even though at the national level too, we will seek to do that. So these are the things that it's ongoing. Our education is ongoing, and we will engage all of them.
Good. Yeah. Reverend Asante, what do you say to those who are saying, criticizing the Peace Council that it has not been effective and that sometimes the Peace Council is seen as being biased in favor of one party or the other? What do you say to those critics?
It is not easy doing the job, the work that we do. One, the Peace Council can have only moral suasion. We don't buy. We cannot prosecute. We can only urge people who are responsible for that to take action against. And then we can also use persuasion to the various political parties and stakeholders to take the peace route in whatever they seek to do. And as you know, if you're not taking people to courts, if you're not doing these things, people who have a penchant to promote violence will not take such things seriously. The next thing is that just look at the track record of the Peace Council of Ghana. The Peace Council has done a lot. Why is it that today people think that we are for party A, the next day they think we are for party B? It is simply because we have sought to be neutral. We have sought to be mediators. We don't consider ourselves as a political party, so we do not also want to do any party's propaganda for them. We need to be very careful about people who cry wolf all the time. In some places, it is true, things are not going the way it ought to, and we raise red flags when these things happen, and we call on the police to act on these matters. But in most cases, people want us to take a stand and condemn one side against the other. Mediators don't function that way.
Reverend Emmanuel Asante is the chairman of the Ghanaian National Peace Council. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. The leader of the Tanzanian opposition party, ACT Wazalendo, says talks to form an alliance with main opposition party Chadema are in an advanced state. The talks are aimed at forming an alliance to challenge the governing Chama cha Mapinduzi or CCM party in the upcoming October general election. Zitto Kabwe says there is a groundswell of support for a united opposition alliance with a single presidential candidate to defeat incumbent President John Magufuli and his governing CCM party. But analysts say the opposition would have to resolve a possible clash of ambitions between Kabwe and Tundu Lissu, a former parliamentarian who recently declared plans to be the presidential candidate for Chadema. This after Zitto Kabwe announced plans to lead the much-anticipated alliance in the presidential poll. Zitto Kabwe tells me there is an understanding between leaders of the opposition groups that to defeat the incumbent president, an alliance is needed to boost the prospects of the opposition in the polls.
When I say that talks are in advanced stages, it means that we have structured discussions already. We have the organs that are dealing with different matters. Both parties have formed technical teams to deal with issues and iron out the areas that are of conflict. But also, I am sure that the time is there for the parliamentary candidates to be shared amongst the partners in the coalition once we form that coalition. But also, the presidential post, already we know who are the leading candidates from both Chadema and ACT, and will definitely settle on one candidate to represent the coalition. And also, even if there are other parties that you will want to join us, it will be fine. Also, for Zanzibar presidential election as well, there is a clear candidate that should be supported by all parties and at the level of the members of the House of Representatives in Zanzibar. So I am sure that, as I said before, the discussions between us as ACT and Chadema as the leading opposition party in the country will lead to a very serious and formidable coalition. The coalition could be in a different ways and manners, but the most important thing is to have one candidate in every contested seat post against a CCM candidate. And with that, I'm very sure the victory will be very certain.
Zitto, I understand you have gone for documents or, you know, to stand as a presidential candidate. Your colleague from another opposition party, Chadema, Tundu Lissu, has also declared his plans to run for the presidency to challenge incumbent president John Magufuli. How would you resolve this urge that both of you seek to lead a united opposition alliance in the upcoming presidential election?
Those are the matters under discussion between the parties. But they are not stumbling blocks to the coalition, because both parties have committed themselves to the single presidential candidate and the single parliamentary candidate for all parliamentary seats and the wards at the council level at the municipal election. So having Honorable Tundu Lissu as a candidate from Chadema and Honorable Bernard Membe, a former foreign minister, as an aspirant from ACT, is not a problem at all, because both Tundu Lissu and Bernard Membe have clearly stated that there is a big need for parties to work together. Both believe in the unity. And there are lessons from countries like Malawi, where recently we have seen how successful it becomes when the opposition come together. So with me, I don't see a problem at all. But I'm sure that the discussions will consider a number of things before deciding which person should be the flag bearer of the opposition in the next elections.
Zitto Kabwe is the leader of the Tanzanian opposition party ACT Wazalendo. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The Carter Center is calling for dialogue in the Democratic Republic of Congo to ensure a new leader at the country's electoral body will enact reforms for credible future polls. It says a broad-based, inclusive dialogue and consensus will help the Independent National Electoral Commission, or CNE, to ensure its processes are transparent. The remarks follow recent strong opposition by the Catholic Lay Coordinating Committee, civil society and opposition groups. They have condemned as unacceptable the choice of Ronsard Molonda as the new chairperson for the CNE. Analysts say a controversial choice to lead CNE will undermine the Carter Center's recommendations of electoral reforms to ensure that future elections are transparent and credible. David Carroll, who heads the Carter Center's Democracy Program, tells me that the organization is calling President Felix Tshisekedi and other stakeholders, including political parties, to be part of a dialogue for a consensus candidate who will lead the CNE.
We know from broad international experience over many years across the world that the position of an election commission chair is extremely important to ensure that there will be neutral administration of elections. And one of the critical ways to ensure that is that when an election commission is being established, that there's broad-based support for the selection of that person. So we're speaking to this both from a international comparative perspective about, you know, what needs to be done to ensure that there's public confidence in an election commission, and also just seeing what has transpired over the past few weeks in the DRC about the disagreements about the selection or the candidate for the CENI chair. So I think it's really important for future elections to have, you know, confidence in them going forward, and that there's someone at the helm of the election commission who can oversee reforms that will ensure that future elections in Congo are well administered and have the confidence of the Congolese citizenry.
What will the Carter Center want to see in a holistic dialogue to resolve some of these concerns surrounding who leads the CNE or the Independent National Electoral Commission in Congo?
I think it's important that there's a broad-based dialogue inclusive of the main political actors and stakeholders so that all key voices can be heard and that a consensus is reached so that you end up with an election commission that really has the support across the political spectrum and across society in Congo.
What do you say to those in Congo who support the newly proposed chairman of the commission, that he has the expertise, he has the pedigree and the technical know-how, and not to repeat the mistakes his predecessors have made in organizing and administering elections in the past? And they believe they have confidence in him enough to make him comfortable to work and ensure that he meets the challenges surrounding elections and its organization in the Congo.
I think those are very important concerns, and it's absolutely critical that who's ever in charge of the election commission has pedigree and skills and the experience. That's certainly important. And it's also, though, frankly, you know, that the technical skills are quite often at the level of the permanent secretariat that are really at the front lines of making sure the elections are well administered. At the top, at the policy level, at the head of an election commission and the key members that are chosen, this is where it's really important that there is agreement across society that those people who are in charge of overseeing elections are trusted and seen as inspiring confidence. So while the technical qualifications are important at the policy level, it's important that there's people who are recognized as independent and willing to oversee elections from an independent perspective.
Does the Carter Center feel that some of these implementation issues could be threatened if the concerns around this proposed chairman are not resolved and he's still confirmed as the chairman of the Electoral Commission?
I think that they go hand in hand. Having critical election reforms passed is really part of the same larger question of having credible independent leadership at the head of CENI, and not just credible, but based on consensus, that there is agreement that the people who are going to be selected really enjoy confidence across the political spectrum, and that that's going to then the basis on which reforms can go forward. I mean, you know, theoretically, the reforms could be passed and they could call for
a new process of selecting an election commission that has broad-based support. But if there's a decision right now to go forward with naming a new chair of the election commission, it's really important, especially since the reforms would then be coming after that, that the chair has that broad-based confidence from across the spectrum of Congolese political life.
It appears that the situation in DRC is tensed and there is a stalemate because a cross-section of the people are strongly opposed to the newly proposed chairman, whereas the National Assembly or the lawmakers have agreed that he should leave. What is the best way forward to resolve this impasse?
I think dialogue, inclusive dialogue, is what's really required in a situation like this. A decision as important as addressing who are going to be the people who will oversee future elections really needs to come out of an inclusive dialogue that leads to an agreed consensus-based decision.
David Caro heads the Carter Center's Democracy Program. He spoke with me from Tennessee here in the U.S. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mbuga and music from our African collection. But first, in The Gambia, the Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC, has denied reports of advanced talks with an opposition group to form an alliance ahead of next year's presidential poll. The party had earlier stated its willingness to cooperate with other opposition groups aimed at defeating incumbent President Adama Barrow. The party's reactions comes after the local media reports that the party and the National People's Party, or NPP, were aiming to form an alliance before the elections. The APRC, however, says some of its members held preliminary discussions with representatives from the NPP, but it quickly added that the reports of advanced talks are misleading and unfortunate. Duduja is the executive secretary of the Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He tells me the party will form alliance only after its requirements are met.
That is quite right. The APRC party currently is not into any negotiation, talks or discussions in forming an alliance or a coalition with any party as of yet. The rumors that went viral saying that the APRC is into coalition talks with the NPP, it's definitely not accurate. Rather, they engage some of our executive members, discuss with them that they want us to back them. It's like they're putting a proposal to some of our executive members, which has not reached the National Executive Committee for discussions to approve or to disapprove. So no discussions is taking place. I believe it's normal for 2-3 individuals to sit and discuss over issues. But it cannot be official until the executive have to sit over it. Or to engage any other party.
But does your group have any plan to have any possible alliance ahead of the elections?
Yes, we're thinking along the lines. We're not ruling it out. But first, we focus on working to build the party. From our bureau, we want to exhaust every angle to assess ourselves before the elections and see what have we done, what have we achieved financially, what is our status, and what is left to be done. If we feel we cannot go alone, that's when we'll turn to other parties and see if we can form a coalition with them. But if we achieve all that we're working towards, we might go on our own without any alliance or coalition.
Well, Dudu, some Gambians are saying that it is impossible to go it alone as a single opposition party, looking at the power of incumbency and the popularity of the president, in spite of the fact that you might disagree that President Adama Barrow is not popular. Some argue he is popular. In using the power of incumbency and said resources, he will be a formidable candidate to defeat. And that's why they are calling for a possible alliance to significantly challenge him in the next election. What are your thoughts?
They might have incumbency. You cannot undermine incumbency. They usually have support internally and externally. Other countries that feel that they have strong bilateral ties, they normally can chip in, even when you need financial support. They have for that. And you also have institutions that if the government is serving their interests, they can also back them up financially and human resource-wise. But we know we have been in the governance for decades. We know the country, length of it, and the people still are showing their loyal calling for APRC to come back power because they have experienced the APRC government and the current government that we have. So most people, they made a mistake and they're turning back to APRC. So this is why I said we are working and we've assessed ourselves, both human resource-wise, financially. We have a roadmap to 2021. We develop our action plan for 2021. So it depends whether we'll be able to achieve it or not. So as election draws, we ourselves and see whether we can go solo or we'll work with others.
Dudu, some people are suggesting if your party and other opposition parties don't move fast enough to enter into alliance or negotiations to get into an alliance to present a single candidate, then some of these opposition parties will team up with President Adama Barrow and defeating him will become impossible. What do you say to that?
When you talk about opposition parties in the Gambia, you have three big opposition parties. Besides the APRC, you have the United Democratic Party, UDP. You have the GDC, Gambia Democratic Congress. And as for the UDP, I don't think they're going to back President Adama Barrow. Likewise, GDC are not thinking along those lines, backing President Adama Barrow. All these parties want to be in charge of this country, not to back Barrow to continue. They want to become the government of the day. As for other newly registered parties, they are just struggling. They cannot pull crowds. We're yet to see one party that has been registered that has pulled a crowd that Gambians can say this party really has the numbers to back the president. Just by name does not mean if all of them collectively go to the president, still it cannot match the other opposition party.
Dudu Ja is the executive secretary and deputy press secretary of the Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul. The Jamaican government has reopened the country's borders for international travelers, including visitors from the U.S., this following movement restrictions imposed by the administration in Kingston to limit the spread of the coronavirus. The Jamaican Tourism Minister, Edmund Bartlett, says the administration worked with international partners to develop comprehensive tourism protocols to ensure the health and safety of visitors while preserving the country's heart and soul. This as the global coronavirus pandemic significantly slows international travel. In an interview, Jamaica's tourism minister tells me his government has implemented measures to ensure health and safety practices for visitors.
Well, first of all, Jamaica is an island state, and our resources, natural and otherwise, are hugely influenced by international trade and global partnership. And one of the critical elements of our economy, of course, is tourism. And the tourism is international tourists that come to our country. So our borders remaining closed is a shutting out of the economy, and the implications of that are very, very severe for our people. So one of the first steps that we had to take in managing this virus that we knew so little about was to prevent the spread. And to prevent the spread meant to close your border. And in so doing, we were able to contain the incidence of the rise of COVID in Jamaica. We have been able to manage sufficiently to the point where all the indicators were in the right direction for us. Our death rate was low, our recovery rate was high, our infection rate essentially was low. And the incidence of heavy hospitalization, as well as the incidence of severe illnesses, were very, very low, in most cases at zero. So that represented a point when a decision could be made to reopen your borders. Now, bearing in mind that we had, first of all, to reopen for our nationals who had to be repatriated. And there are thousands of Jamaicans that were all over the world wanted to come home. Those who were students, those who were working on cruise lines, those who had just gone for vacation to visit friends and family, or otherwise contractual obligations elsewhere that they have expired. So we dealt with that first. And so starting the 1st of June, we opened our borders for our nationals to be repatriated. And then on the 15th of June, he began the phased reopening of international visitor arrivals to Jamaica.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Minister. What do you say to those who are of the opinion that your country is prioritizing tourism or making money for the administration or for the government as to people's lives, in spite of the measures you said your administration has implemented to limit the spread of the disease?
So we have developed a whole regime of management based on algorithms that are very clear and understood. We look at what level of infection rate we have. We look at how the death rate has been. We look at how the recovery rate has. Jamaica enjoys now an 84% recovery rate. We look at, again, serious hospitalization and it's zero. People in intensive care units, for example, zero. Those mildly hospitalized at 23. So when you look at all of those, you recognize that, yes, we are in a position where we can manage our circumstances. We have hospitals that are utilized fully for this, and they are having capacity still. We look also at what level of visitor arrival could we properly accommodate, and if there are incidences, how do we deal with that so that it does not in any way impact the ability to manage our own local circumstances.
So let me ask you this question. Looking at the international travel, which has almost ground to a halt, what is the target here? How many people are you targeting to come to Jamaica to spend their money tourism-wise? And do you think this is pragmatic enough following this global pandemic that we are currently experiencing?
Well, you know, we also manage by through the science and how that's going and data which we get from the marketplace. And although there is a declining appetite for travel based on what's happening in source market, there's also a market that still exists. And there are people who are in good health and who are willing to travel, and also who will travel to destinations that have shown a higher level of management of the pandemic. And Jamaica is one of those countries. We have shown that, as a matter of fact, in the entire Americas, Jamaica is number one, along with Costa Rica, in terms of the number of deaths to 100,000. And we at a 3 to 100,000 ratio of deaths is top of the pile and makes a good statement in terms of our own ability to deal with and manage the pandemic. So we recognize that, yes, there is a shrinking market, but we have to remain in business because that's the economy. And we put very strong protocols which have attracted the attention of the World Travel and Tourism Council and other global tourism entities, and not just attract, but have been awarded the Safe Travel Seal. So all the touch points that the World Travel Council requires, beyond that, all the touch points that the World Health Organization requires, and the Center for Disease Control in the United States, we fulfill here in Jamaica. We go beyond that. We create through technology, a platform that will enable us to screen the visitors who come into our country as well.
Edmond Bartlett is the Jamaican Tourism Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Kingston. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The 2023 Africa Cup of Nations will take place in June and July. The Secretary General of the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Abdel Ba, announced the switch and clarified that according to the new regulations, CAF has decided to play all Nations Cup in June and July. In 2017, CAF decided to schedule all future Nations Cups for this month, enshrining the change in its tournament regulations. The next Nations Cup will take place in January 2022. However, due to unfavorable weather conditions in Cameroon in June and July, when the host country suffers some of the wettest months of the year, with the Nations Cup in early 2022 and mid-2023 and the 2022 World Cup, it means some of Africa's leading footballers could play three major tournaments in the space of 18 months. Meanwhile, Egypt and Tunisia have both said they are prepared to host the semi-finals and final of this year's Africa Champions League. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, is looking to replace Cameroon, who on Monday withdrew from hosting the matches due to a spike in coronavirus infections in the country. The games are scheduled for September. The semi-finals are both said to be Morocco against Egypt, as Al Ahly play Wydad Casablanca, while Zamalek take on Raja Casablanca. Before the postponement of sports around the world due to COVID-19, the semi-finals were set to be played over two legs, home and away, with the final a one-off match on neutral territory for the first time ever. Last month, CAF decided that the Champions League and the Confederation Cup resume in September in a Final Four format and the semi-finals reduced to a single match. The Confederation Cup matches will be played in Morocco. In athletics, October's Chicago Marathon has been cancelled because of coronavirus concerns, according to the marathon organizers. This follows United States' other major marathons in Boston and New York that have also been called off because of the pandemic. Kenya's Brigid Kosgei won the women's race in 2019 in a world record time, and compatriot Lawrence Chirono won the men's race. Meanwhile, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach has said the International Olympic Committee is fully committed to the Tokyo Olympics 2021. The Olympics should have begun on July 24th, but were postponed in March because of COVID-19 and are now due to be held from July 23rd to August 8th of next year. The International Olympic Committee president said there were all different countermeasures, but hoped spectators would be allowed. He said an Olympics behind closed doors is clearly something they do not want. Meanwhile, the Youth Olympics in Senegal, scheduled for 2022, have been put back to 2026. Bach explained that the fourth edition of the Youth Games was postponed due to the financial consequences of the current global health crisis. And finally, World Athletics President Lord Cole has been elected as a member of the International Olympic Committee. The 63-year-old had been turned down for IOC membership a number of times, most recently in December. The two-time Olympic 1500-meters champion became head of Athletics World Governing Body in 2015. And that's it for this edition of Nathan Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
One plus one is one. Now it be the arithmetic. Friends will keep us together. Can nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, one plus one is one. Now it be the melody. I go to play you forever. Can nobody treat you like I do, my baby, oh baby. Check, pretty girl, I just wanna say, now you didn't make me the feel this way. In the ocean of your sweet love, baby, I'm swimming. True love, no be my energy. And see, I got the formula to penetrate your heart. Let me break it down, it's you that I want. The kind of ring when I want give you. This time around, not that kind of ring though. When I go put on your finger, right on the together. Can nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, one plus
makali ufanya na kumbusha Kenya vile kiswahili ni kitamu au sio eh nyota
Music. school. Put them aside. All the stress is you. Let's just be happy. Forget your worries. Let's just be happy. Control of your heart. Let's just be happy.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sally, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you cannot look ahead, you will always remain behind. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.